No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for OTA notes for June 11th, 2025. It'll be the last day of practice this week. We were told at the end that there would be no regular practice. There had been one scheduled tomorrow. And so the next time they'll be together will be at mandatory minicamp next week. They're going to have some meetings, I think they said, tomorrow. So anyway, the Ravens moving along in this offseason. After minicamp next week, the summer hiatus comes, and they'll be back for camp at the end of July. So that will be the next time I'll be there in person. So anyway, absent today, Lamar Jackson again. I don't have to keep saying that him missing practice changes everything about it, but that is the case. Derrick Henry, Justice Hill is absent. Rashad Bateman and DeAndre Hopkins among the wide receivers. Emory Jones still trying to get over his shoulder problem. I do not believe he's going to be a participant in minicamp next week. The talk, and I think it's really the hope, is that he would be back for training camp, and so we'll see if that plays out as is. He's done some things at times. He's been there a fair amount, shadowing the action, but he wasn't there today doing that. Let's see. We had Kyle Hamilton back, which was nice to have him back for a day. Mike Green was missing today at a funeral. Kyle Van Noy has missed again. I believe he's missed every single OTA practice to date. Adafi Owe was missing today. Chidobe Awuzie and Bo Braid both nursing what were termed by Harbaugh to be minor ankle injuries. In the interviews, maybe that means they're back next week at mandatory minicamp, or maybe not. So we'll have to see about that. Nnamdi Madubuike was not there, and Broderick Washington was not there on the defensive line. As usual, I spent a lot of time watching OL practice. Coach Warhop yesterday was in a different mode of coaching almost. So yesterday, and I don't know if it has something to do with his podium responsibilities or whatnot. He's thinking about what he needs to do later in the day, but he's extremely terse, I thought, yesterday. Today was back to more thorough coaching, more detailed coaching after individual reps where he saw something he didn't really like. He didn't do it all day or anything, but there are about six or seven times where he stopped to give somebody some detailed coaching. Carson Vinson got chewed out for not running off the snap. So, he said some other choice words in there that I won't repeat, but basically he's got things to say still to Carson Vinson. He hasn't forgotten about him. It's interesting that Dellinger got some advice regarding leading with his shoulder as a run blocker. So that was really interesting. So Dellinger turned into his block rather than using both hands to kind of shove upwards underneath the pad of the offensive lineman acting as a defender on the play, who's not in any way acting opposite him. Dellinger almost wanted to treat the guy like a blocking sled. and just, you know, throw his shoulder into him basically and push as hard as he could that way. So anyway, a little strange, but he said, no, if you did that to him, then he'd throw you down onto the ground. I think that was the word he used, or he's going to pull you down. And, you know, he wanted him to keep his head up and lead with his hands through this blocking exercise. I thought he was generally very positive with Daniel Falalele. He did have one piece of advice he gave him at one point, but the very next rep was a attaboy kind of rep. And he seems to be as bought into Daniel Falalele as Coach Joe D was at the beginning of last camp when I think he was kind of his guy, his selection. It was an interesting day for Tyler Loop, definitely up and down. So John Hoyland kicked yesterday and he made 5 out of 5 or 6 out of 6, whichever it was. And his field goals were all in that range. It was a little, most of them just below 50 and a couple, one above 50, I think 52 yards might've been his longest. Tyler Loop tried some really long kicks today. He was on the practice field. And so they have field 1, field 2, field 3. And I don't know if you're familiar with how that's laid out, but field 1 is like closest to the parking lot or where you get off from a bus or where you'd enter if you're a fan just attending practice. And field 2 is like in the, what do you call it? The L of the building. It's tucked into the L of the two buildings between the indoor practice facility and the castle component of the building. And then field 3 is the furthest away from the building. And oftentimes those special teamers will be on field 3. They rotate it because they don't want to wear down the fields. Oftentimes the special teamers will be kicking down there while the rest of the team is up for, you know, 100 of 120 minutes of practice or more. And they can't continually kick, but they kick, you know, a fair amount. And so I got to see Tyler Loop, and if I get an opportunity where it doesn't seem to be a problem and the people are a different field, I'll try and mosey on right under the uprights they're kicking at, and watch that happen. And Tyler Loop has, you know, he's good end over end rotation of the ball that look good. I don't have a really good way to estimate distance on what's going on, but he did hit the crossbar on a fairly long kick. I would estimate had to be in the high 50s or maybe longer. The one he missed, you know, and hit the crossbar, very big leg. And he was hitting a lot of his kicks, deep and straight on. And he had one miss wide right that I noticed. And then he made several more that I would say were all 50 plus. Some of it is him just trying to test out what are the limits of his leg, obviously. And the kick from that hit the crossbar was a very long attempt, I can say. So it's 60 plus yards, probably, on that day. All right. Then he moved to the main field and he tried a few kicks where they haven't used a temporary goalpost on field 1. Okay, that's where the practice was taking place today. And they had not moved that into position in the way they would normally do. So they hadn't rolled it to the end line. And one of the reasons they don't really want to do that is because when they're running non-kicking drills, they don't want anybody running into that goalpost. In fact, when they do have it there, they put some pads on, and we still had a near accident with Malik Cunningham running into it a few weeks ago. So anyway, goalpost is set. And then he tried some kicks, and he hit from 33, from 40, from 43, then from 55. And these were, I don't have these all labeled out consecutively. Let me see how good it hit from 30, 33, 40, and 43. All good. And then he tried from 50 and was wide right. Tried from 55, was wide right again. Tried from 55 a second time. We think these distances are accurate. There's a lot of communication in the media and agreeing on what these distances were. From 55 again, wide right. Then hit one from 55. Then he went to 60 and went wide left. And then he came back to 53 and made the kick. So made 5 out of 9 kicks. 5 out of 9. Which is obviously not terrific. It was a lot of very long kicks, he's probably a couple things are going on. He's attempting to differentiate himself from Hoyland in terms of being a distance kicker, and also has just I think wants to make longer kicks. I just say it's something I think kickers probably enjoy. They almost don't want to waste their kicks, if you want to think of it that way, trying to make a 35 or 40 yard field goal. They want to try and make it from longer distance. Kind of like if you're just out shooting baskets, there's something about wanting to end on a good made 3-point shot or even a half court shot, as opposed to, you know, sticking it in from 8 feet or 12 feet or whatever. If you're someone who can even make those shots, that's not me. I'll openly say. All right, let's move on. Safety competition was next. This has been something I've been trying to follow and give you some reports on a daily basis. Starks, I would say, continues to look solid. He's in position generally on plays. Probably has not played exclusively free safety in terms of where they start him on the field, because they move him around a little bit and they want to use him in different ways and whatnot. But it's not that they're not also trying for a versatile role for it. Think of more as Ed Reed would occasionally blitz the passer. Ed Reed would occasionally try and creep up the line of scrimmage and then make a stop on a run play. It's that kind of usage. He's definitely a free safety, and that's what he's going to be this year for Ravens. That's what they desperately are going to need him to do, given what they have in terms of talent that can play the back end. Hamilton, back at practice. Nice to see him take some reps. What he took was basically on the back end and was looking like his old self. I didn't see them anyway today really trying to move him all over the field and take advantage of that versatility. It's not like he was always maybe on the back end, but it's not just, he wasn't a highlight player in that. And the defense didn't have any kind of trick plays that I noticed where they're trying to get Hamilton lined up to knock down a pass for Njoku by the, you know, left sideline and then take it to the house kind of thing. They didn't have anything like that. So it's just a good day of practice on the back end for Kyle, pretty much. Sanusi Kane did have a big day. Now, I did not see him make a single play on the ball, but he moved around well. He's actually commented positively designated by Harbaugh during his interview was that he flew over the field and he did things. I would say he moved around pretty well. He's on the back end, appeared to be generally in position. He has timidness is not the right word. He's a little afraid to get beat over the top. And one of the things that I noticed in previous days was that he had some trouble making his first step going to the right place. They may be telling him more about just go ahead and make an error at 100 miles an hour. We'd rather see you do that, and we'd rather see how your judgment works out. But anyway, didn't get beat over the top that I noticed today on any individual play. There weren't a whole lot of deep passes that were completed today. So you know, in a sense, he was in a good position to not have that happen. He probably contributed to it as well. We didn't see Bo Braid today. He had that leg injury. Was it now yesterday or 2 days ago, whichever it was, where he left the field, didn't return. I guess it was on Monday. And he has not been back since. And neither Chidobe Awuzie was not back either from getting wrapped up on the same day. Didn't see any of JAD lining up as a safety. And one thing that was suggested was that maybe JAD had lined up as a corner deeper on the side that had no wide receiver. So sometimes that'll happen and you know, his responsibility then shifts to some deeper zone or making sure he's as wide as the widest tight end or running back might end up who might come out to that side. I don't think that's not what I believe I saw before. I believe I saw some snaps where he was actually lined up at safety, and that's what Zach Orr said. So I'm going to go with him and say he probably knows what's going on. But he was further off the line of scrimmage and more towards the center of the field was my recollection with some of the snaps that I'd seen earlier. I'll say again, and it's kind of sad, but neither Keandre Jackson nor Desmond Igbinosun has really stepped up in a way to pressure the final spots at safety. So the Ravens are really looking for answers there. They can't be really happy with what's happened with their defensive backfield depth, with injuries to Braid, he might not honestly play that deep, significantly into their thoughts, but also to Chidobe Awuzie, not being on the field, and to Washington being lost for the year. So I presume it's for the year. They're talking about a November or December return. I'm not really buying into that, but in any case, he's going to be out for a while, and the Ravens need answers. Jeff Cerebeck did ask a question of John at the podium, and he said, we can both be happy with the depth we have currently at corner and also still be looking, which is another way to say you're still looking. So anyway, some interesting things on that. I'll talk about that a little later. I'm going to go very quickly through some other highlights that happened in 11-on-11. Hamilton had tight coverage of Rasheen Ali, which forced a grounding of a ball near the line of scrimmage between the numbers and the right hash. Sam Pitts had a ball punched out by inside linebacker Chandler Martin after a short pass to the left. Stone and Toe, now that's a name we haven't heard too much this camp so far. He transitioned quickly from a catch to a run upfield on one play. It looked like a really good, nice making space after the catch. And he's a big guy. So, you know, if you can have that kind of transitional catch to run ability, you really like to see that in a guy who can also break tackles. A guy I connect that with as a Raven in former years was Obi Muhaley, who had a very fine 2006 season where he didn't get his first catch until the Tennessee game, I believe, or maybe he had two catches before that, but he had basically not been used as a receiver until that game. And then he had a 30-yard touchdown pass where he ran over a Titans linebacker on the play. And then that was, by the way, that 30-yard touchdown was the longest play by a Ravens fullback in their history until Kyle Juszczyk joined the team. So it was really something in terms of the play. It helped trigger a big comeback from down 26-7 as well in that game at Tennessee. They ended up winning 27-26. But he's a guy who I associate with as being fairly quick moving transitionally from the catch to the run after the catch. So you want a nice, secure hand catcher who doesn't double catch, as you know, we hear some of the player analysts talk about at the combine sometime. They want to see that out of running backs. Be guys who can catch and secure very quickly. Anyway, I don't know if it was the very next play, but it might have been two plays later. But Anto didn't turn for the football on a pass that went out to the right sideline and just kept going, and it was not obviously on the same page with the quarterback on that play. One guy who's been probably having a better but a little bit of a quiet camp was Tez Walker. Tez Walker had a nice catch, 10 yards on the left sideline from Leary. He had a very tough camp physically last year, and I talked about this a little bit, but he was a guy who was getting beat up a little bit by Christian Matthew, who's a veteran defensive back who playing probably a little more physically than he should be, particularly early in camp, and gave Walker a little bit of the business personally a couple of times. And I felt like Walker has done a better job putting himself in position where he can box out defenders. I talked to Jonah Schaefer a little bit about this today. He said he thought that Walker was coming back for the ball better. I think that's a really good observation. So anyway, I think he's had a pretty good camp, and he made a camp, a ball coming, sorry, a catch coming back for the ball from Leary on that left sideline today. Malik Cunningham had a 15-yard crossing catch from Cooper Rush, and it's significant for Cunningham, who, frankly, his chances to make the team are quite remote, but also for the fact that he beat TJ Tampa on the play crossing. And that's something, if TJ Tampa is going to have a particular problem, it could be on crossing routes where his speed will not be up to the task. And if his top of the stem reads are not great in terms of picking up on in-cutting, in-breaking routes, then he's going to have trouble keeping up with a player who has speed, because that's not his hallmark. So anyway, Tampa beat on that play. Jamal Banks caught a 25-yard pass by the right sideline. He beat Bilal Kone. Kone had a PD by the right sideline as well, but on the very next play, he collided with Banks and was flagged for DPI. And it looked like Banks held on anyway. And there was cheering on that side of the field. So I think that he probably did. So kind of a double whammy for Kone. If you're going to run into a guy in a non-contact practice like this, you better make sure the ball comes out. So anyway, that didn't look so great. Zaire Mitchell-Payton had a couple of drops on the day. Number 84, the tight end, if you're out of camp. I think he's an IPP guy, but let me check my roster here for a second to make sure if that's the case, because they've got several guys who could be designated that way. And he's not actually listed that way. They have a defensive lineman listed that way, but I think Mitchell-Payton may be a guy who I better just shut my mouth because I'm not 100% sure he's that. I thought I remembered him being that, but it may be the name Zaire that is doing that to me. And, I apologize if that's the case. He is a guy who's probably the fourth tight end option at this point, ahead of Sam Pitts, I would say, and behind the big three. Dayton Wade. Now, Dayton Wade is having a camp. He made a couple of great catches yesterday. One over the shoulder where he's kind of having to go back and forth between left shoulder and right shoulder, and then caught it almost directly over the top as he was sliding to the ground at the corner of the end zone. And then the official ruled him out of bounds. just a sad thing, because he had his receiver beat, and the ball was probably just slightly overthrown for the field of play. And he was not able to pull it, but he had other catches on the day too, behind the defense, and had another nice one today, crossing versus Marquise Robinson. Marquise Robinson, if you remember that name, was the fastest player at practice one of these last few days. He's one of the few guys who was over 20 or, well, he's over 20 miles an hour. I don't know if he's over 21.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
But anyway, he beat him, and beat him on a crossing route. That's really something. I expect Wade is a guy who might really get an opportunity, but there's something that's wrong, because the coaches, they had all last year to try and get him in there. And first of all, you have Deontay Hardy to go in. And Wade had a huge preseason, 99 yards of receptions. I mean, he's the one offensive weapon in a really bad preseason of Ravens offense who was really stood out in terms of you know, getting behind the defense fairly regularly, making big plays. I think he had a 64-yard play, and he had 9 yards per target, with none of that coming from Lamar Jackson, mind you. So it was all a bunch of backup quarterbacks throwing him the ball. And, you know, he looked very good, and it looked like he might return kicks. The Ravens, anyway, ended up with a tremendous need at punt returner during the season. They really found their kickoff return needs coming from running backs. And Harbaugh had a comment about that I want to get back to later. But the fact that they had so many problems at wide receiver for starters, where they had a lot of depth issues, where they had players go down and they needed people to come in and step up. And if you remember, they went to Anthony Miller and they went to Steven Sims, and they went out and they got Deontay, I don't even remember his name anymore, Deontay Johnson, I remember his name. But he's been cut again multiple times since then, if I recall correctly, certainly by the Ravens, but also by the Texans, I believe, after that. So they had a lot of opportunities to find a place for Dayton Wade to come in and play, and they never did. And you know, I'm not there at practice during the regular season, obviously, and even the media only gets to stay for 30 minutes of practice each day. So you don't really get a chance to see whether or not he might be impressing the coaches. But you know that, you know, a team that is that desperate, even with a fairly veteran wide receiver stable that was sitting there on the practice squad, you know, with players like Kirkland and Sims and Miller, all, you know, guys who have played, you know, had significant number of targets in the NFL already. You would think that a player like Dayton Wade, who fills a, you know, potentially could fill a return role for a team that had tremendous problems with it, would get a chance. So, you know, not only did he not get a chance last year, this year they draft LaJonte Wester, who is, you know, a very much a comp for him in terms of size, speed, elusiveness, and, you know, ability to return kicks and punts. I mean, I think Wester is more of a punt return guy, and the experience that Wade had was more as a kickoff returner, but still, I'm sure during camp last year, Wade was doing both, and it probably could have been something that he would have adapted to if needed as a punt returner. And it just, it kind of bothers me. And it means that obviously they're privy to more information about how he played in practice. It would probably say there are other reasons we can't see why he never got on the field. But anyway, having a really good set of OTAs so far. He looks great catching the football, and he's kind of guy I'm rooting for in terms of what's going on. Charlie Kolar had several catches. None, as I recorded, was really beating a defender deep. A lot of them were underneath or L2 or L3 throws where it was he was sitting down in zone kind of thing. Maybe some checkdowns in there too. And some I'm including in 7-on-7 in there. It wasn't like he had an unproductive day catching the ball. It's just no real explosive catches in that group. Anthony Miller beat Keandre Jackson crossing on one of the final 11-on-11 full speed plays, but Leary threw the ball out of bounds, over his head. That was unfortunate. Miller had done a lot to separate on that play versus a guy who it's just the kind of player that he might really want to beat or might be tasked to beat in a real game. And the ball's offline. And that's one of the unfortunate things of, you know, having some backup QBs there. So Leary threw the ball out of bounds on that play. It was interesting on the last play of like what I believe was the last 11 on 11 full speed segment. The offense attempted a lateral, and they must have known that, hey, we're just going to keep, we're going to see if we can score here. After the play was about to be tackled. And remember, there's no real tackling in this. There's just, you know, approach and kind of look like you're in the position, wait for the whistle. And then all of a sudden they started laddering the ball, and there were two laterals. And then the crowd started to get excited. And then the ball went to Tyler Linderbaum, and Linderbaum speared the ball in the air, which was impressive in its own right. And then he turned to pitch it, and the pitch ended up hitting the ground. And I don't remember if it was a guy who dropped it, or I didn't see, actually, I should say, whether it was a player who dropped it, or Linderbaum might have slightly misfired the pitch. The biggest cheer of the day was him catching the lateral and having it, and how excited people were for that. After practice, we saw Wester, Banks, and Gilroy, three wide receivers, spending time on the jugs gun. I've seen Wade there in past days, but always good to see the receivers putting in some extra work there. And Wester, certainly a guy who figures into the Ravens' plans, I would think this year in a fairly prominent manner. At the podium, we got John Harbaugh, Chuck Smith, and Tavius Robinson and Adisa Isaac. I've got some very limited notes here, and I normally would go back and I would try and listen again to make sure that I didn't misrecord anything or I'm mischaracterizing anything. So I may have paraphrased some things, but the intention is not to misreport, of course. He responded that the injuries to Braid and Awuzie were both minor ankle injuries, did not give a timeline as far as that goes. Now, this is interesting. He talked about the kickoff return duties under the new rules, and he specifically mentioned the 35-yard line touchback and the likelihood that more kicks were going to be returned. And he said the running backs have adapted very well to the kickoff return duties. And a couple of days ago, Keaton Mitchell was at the podium, and he talked about how he thought it was like a zone run. It's like an outside zone run that, you know, you kind of run laterally, look for your cutback lane, then find your spot and go. And it's very interesting the point of view is the same. Maybe even something that Harbs has picked up on talking to Mitchell about the thing specifically. But I think, you know, if you're a football mind, you probably see it directly on the field. And I thought that was just interesting that he would mention it as well. He's asked about TJ Tampa and his success, and he says he's been healthy and that he's shown flash, but he needs to continue to chase consistency. Tampa's a guy, he definitely had a big day a day or two ago, and I'm kind of losing track of the days as they pass here with OTAs being a similar time of day and whatnot. But he did have an interception and another pass defensed. I believe it was on Monday. And then he has not done a whole lot since and got beat on some plays, including today. So that was unfortunate. And obviously, you know, it's chasing consistency, I think, is what he's going for there. And the other thing he said about the cornerback depth in general, and Srebeck asked the question, he said, you know, you got a young cornerback room, and there's a couple of veterans that are out there right now. I think he's referring to the Dolphins guy, Jalen Ramsey, and also Jair Alexander are both available. And he said they're happy with their cornerback depth, and they're still looking on the outside, is what I got from it. I hope I'm not mischaracterizing that. He might have said, we're always still looking at other options, kind of thing. He might have said words like that, but I'm trying to characterize it correctly. And I would encourage you, by the way, if you're interested in any of these topics, the Ravens publish the actual video interviews, and they can be very good. So if there's something that, you know, triggers interest, and I'm going to get to one in just a moment, then I really suggest you go back and listen to it, because a lot of times I can't do it justice by trying to summarize it in the way I do here. He did say he was happy with Sanusi Kane's play, and Sanusi specifically picked out Sanusi as being a guy who's moving around the field well today. Okay, next up was Chuck Smith. And Chuck Smith is a very, very interesting guy to interview. So, first of all, I asked a question. I made an unfortunate mistake of saying that, you know, I know you typically work with outside linebackers. He goes, well, let me tell you, I'm actually the pass rush coach. So I work with defensive linemen, with outside linebackers. We have an outside linebackers coach, and we have a defensive line coach, and they have the job. So we have an inside linebackers coach. I'm the pass rush coach. And that could mean an outside linebacker, a defensive lineman, an inside linebacker, and a corner even. So I assume it means the safety as well. It could be literally anybody. So thank you for the clarification, Coach. I really appreciate it. He also said that everybody should have a pass rush skill. Now, I think what he's trying to get at is that different body types probably need a different way to get home. And if you're a slot corner, you probably need to play on your elusiveness to pick your gap correctly and get home without being blocked. If you're a inside linebacker, you might want to work on moves that beat a running back who is the most likely guy to pick you up if you come as a red dog. If you're a defensive lineman, you may not have the entire arsenal of moves that an outside linebacker has, but you better have something that you can go to that's a good skill that you like, whether it's a straight up bull rush. Maybe you've got a spin move on the inside, which we got some players now on the Ravens who do, including Aeneas Peebles, for example. And maybe you have a few tools in the shed, like a Nnamdi Matabike that you can pull the bases. Everybody needs to have a skill. So that was interesting because there are a couple of power pass rushers coming up, and I got to ask that question, is what do you think you bring to the table as a pass rusher? So Dafe Owe, he talked about a little bit, carrying more weight, seemed to be very positive on it. He said he really hasn't seen a loss of speed or athleticism from it. So that's good. He was asked questions about Mike Green. And he said the thing that really impressed him about Mike Green was that he's a very high effort player who runs to the ball. He says, you sometimes find yourself telling somebody, okay, come on, get going here. And you shouldn't have to coach effort at this level, was his comment. Very astute comment on that, is not needing to do that. The other thing he said is that Green is very coachable and he asks questions. So he comes over, he asks questions. He's talked about Tavius Robinson a little bit, very positive on Tavius Robinson. He said he's everything you look for in a Raven. He sits up front, he takes notes, he works after practice, and he never misses a practice. And by the way, John Harbaugh said the same thing. Never misses a practice, never misses a workout, never misses something else. And the last thing was never misses a meal. So I thought that was funny that he may have the reputation as being one of the three meal a day crew that's in there really taking advantage of the, what I think of as being like a rookie or a practice squad thing. When you make a little less money, you really want to take advantage of the three meals that the clubs offers on site. And you know, then for starters, you don't have to do grocery shopping. You can start with that. Or if you do go, you have a few energy drinks, you have something else in your refrigerator to handle yourself at late at night. But you don't have to have, you know, a grocery shopping run all the time. And when you're at camp, you don't have a lot of time to do that kind of stuff anyway. Last thing he said, and this was really impressive, this is what you want to go back to that video and watch, is he talked about Zach Orr and how much he's been kind of obviously upset by the fact that a lot of other people are getting credit for the turnaround in the Ravens defense last year, that Orr was having trouble. And so they brought in help and the DNPs fixed the defense and blah, blah, blah. And he says, no, that's not the way that what happened. What happened was Zach Orr fixed the defense. And Zach Orr was the one who was standing right up to the media, answering tough questions for as things were going wrong. And then he would stand up to the players and both be positive, but also very tough on them, which is obviously a tough balance to strike, that kind of loved and feared thing. But he was extremely positive on him being the dude. He thought he would be an outstanding coordinator in this league. And the way the Ravens defense obviously is playing at the end of the season certainly deserves a lot of credit. The fact that the Ravens brought in Chuck Pagano, I don't think it reflects poorly on Orr at all, particularly the fact that I don't think Pagano on anything but maybe an interim basis or a 1 year basis is probably what I mean. If Orr were to leave for a head coaching job, they might turn to Pagano for a year as defensive coordinator, but I don't think he'd hold that job long term. I think they'd be immediately looking for who's their next dynasty coordinator to bring in and be the guy. Pagano's older than Harbaugh and is a guy that has excellent experience working with defensive backs, and frankly, you know, in doing a lot of things with the defense, but is somebody who I think the Ravens, you know, really want in a specialized role to help some individual players and help some units that have some young players there. And hopefully that'll work magic with the Ravens' young cornerbacks this year, because it's, you know, Tampa and Kone and Longerbeam and, you know, to a lesser extent, probably Malachi Starks, you know, can all use a person like Pagano in their corner to try and help them assimilate to the NFL. But anyway, Chuck Smith probably talked 2 minutes on how much he appreciates and maybe admires is the right word, Zach Orr, in terms of his how he turned the defense around last year. He says he's the dude for doing it. All right, Tavius Robinson was next at the podium. He has confirmed that he has zero career missed practices, and I assume that means OTAs and everything. So, you know, because Harbaugh was very clear to say he's always here. That's a really nice thing. To be able to put someone at the podium after you've already said that about them. And Tavius Robinson's contributions to this team have not gone unnoticed. He had a really fine year last year in terms of a lot of the peripheral things that you don't normally associate with an edge, or that don't seem front and center for an edge. And because he rushes the quarterback primarily on first or second down, he's not typically the guy you have on the field for third down. He doesn't get the best pass rush opportunities, but if he did, then he would be in a better position with Saxon. That actually was said exactly by Chuck Smith. So from that side, I thought it was positive. But he had some other interesting things to say. He thought that power and the bull rush were his calling cards in terms of a pass rush skill. He's worked with Trenton Simpson all offseason. So the two of them took 2 weeks off after the break. And then they came back and they've been training together. And Simpson, by the way, is absolutely enormous. He's one of the players who's physically changed as much as just about anybody this offseason in terms of being a lot, you know, bigger. It's really good to hear, because I think that's probably true of Tavius as well. Tavius was pretty big to start with. So looking for big things from Tavius this year. The other thing he said is he does yoga with Adisa Isaac sometimes. And that was interesting, because I saw them, they had an indoor practice, and while we're doing the podium time, all of a sudden this yoga is going on behind us. And it was just kind of interesting to see. I didn't realize they did that. It makes all kinds of sense that, you know, you do stretching and whatnot that would improve your flexibility. But I did not know that the Ravens were doing that in-house. Adisa Isaac came to the podium. He talked about some of the injuries and adversity he had last year as a rookie and the difficulty getting on the field and whatnot. He and TJ Tampa had bonded some over having a similar rehab. They both had hamstring problems. In Isaac's case, the point was made that Isaac had a hamstring injury, and then he injured his hamstring in his other leg. So he actually had both hamstrings that he was, you know, rehabbing at some point during 24 and maybe into the 25 offseason as well. He said his pass rush skill is tied up in length, speed, effort. He didn't use the word bend. He talked about getting to the corner, but typically that's what a pass rusher means, is the ability to bend and see some good ankle flex and be able to push back against that tackle who's trying to go 12-6 on you. But it did seem those are the areas he picked out for his own strengths. And I asked him about Chuck Smith, and actually I didn't ask him this question. I don't believe somebody else did, about things that he emphasized. He talked about stunt movements being something. So that's really good, because that makes Chuck Smith not an individual pass rush coach. Now you're talking about somebody who's handling pass rush scheme for the defense. So I was not aware that was Chuck Smith's responsibility, but that's very interesting. And I wonder how much then he's responsible for other elements, for helping to game plan other elements like simulated pressure, would obviously be a big one. And also how the blitzes are timed up would be another. So three big elements of deception, of course, are blitzes, sim pressure, and stunts. And you know, the fact that he was, you know, singled out by Isaac as being a guy who looked at individual stunt movements, I thought said a lot about maybe where his role is within this entire defensive scheme. So I was more impressed by that, even though Chuck Smith generally a very impressive guy. But I would encourage you to go back and listen to the Chuck Smith speech, the soapboxing on how good Zach Orr has been and how much he was responsible for last year's turnaround. And I think you'll appreciate that. All right, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for listening again. Appreciate all the listens. If you've got a topic to discuss in a film study short, you hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. And I'd love to talk football about what you're passionate about sometime over the next 6 weeks or so before camp begins. And I'll talk to you later on Film Study.